También grupos de topos israelitas, grupos de topos mexicanos y los japoneses, que son los que están comandando allí, ya están trabajando como en conjunto.
Explica que participó en una operación para identificar sobrevivientes bajo los escombros.
Y a nosotros nos tocó rodear a la redonda, pues fuimos bastantes, de que los automovilistas apagaran su coche, no celulares, motocicletas, guardaran silencio, fue como por media hora. En conjunto pues con todas las autoridades que hay aquí, pero echaron mano de todos los voluntarios que andan aquí, porque sí, era muy intenso, era muy interesante que todos apoyáramos ayer para la prueba de sonido.
Martínez Troncoso cree que en los próximos días podría hallarse más sobrevivientes.
Dicen los que tuvieron la experiencia del 85 que después de 11 días todavía encontraron vida, y aquí apenas van que 5 días, es muy poco tiempo, o sea que todavía tienen esperanza.
Adolfo Antonio Carvajal ha participado como electricista instalando luces para las operaciones de rescate en Tlalpan.
En primer lugar, el corazón duele. Es una emoción muy fuerte, la cual no cualquier persona puede estar ahí en esa área, porque la emoción es muy fuerte, de ver a muchas personas, de solamente imaginar que están sin vida, ¿no? Yo siento que es algo humano, ¿no? Es algo que yo puedo hacer y que estoy dispuesto a hacer, porque también se arriesga la vida allá adentro. Allá adentro no es fácil, de que ya uno está arriba del edificio, está pues apoyando a todos los que están rescatando los cuerpos.
La vida de Adolfo no ha sido fácil. Desde niño vivió en las calles, se enfrentó a adicciones y terminó en correccionales y cárceles. Dice que otras personas, sin conocerlo, lo han ayudado y ahora le tocó a él.
Y entonces en la prisión es algo muy padre cuando las personas van como apoyo a llevarnos una obra de teatro, un grupo de música, los cristianos, los católicos, hacer retiros espirituales, los grupos de alcohólicos anónimos, de narcóticos. Entonces, esas experiencias quedan en el corazón. Y entonces hoy, pues hago lo mismo, ¿no? O sea, regreso lo que me han dado en la vida, personas que en verdad yo nunca he conocido, lo que han hecho por nosotros en las prisiones, en la calle, en las cárceles, ¿no? A través de los años de mi vida.
Gotita, la integrante de la Brigada Clown, expresó el sentir del pueblo mexicano ante otra tragedia ocurrida justamente en el 32 aniversario del terremoto de 1985, que mató a más de 10.000 personas.
Que de hoy en adelante, cada vez que nos subamos a cualquier transporte público, sonriamos, porque cualquiera de los que nos rodea va a agarrar una pala, va a agarrar una cobija, va a agarrar un impermeable y nos va a salvar. Que de esto aprendamos, que nosotros somos más fuertes que las adversidades.
Para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Norma Martínez.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
También puedes escuchar estas y otras ediciones del Informativo Pacífica en nuestro blog, pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
No envidiaba la presidencial.
El gobernador de Puerto Rico, Ricardo Rosselló, asegura que si Estados Unidos no toma medidas inmediatas, esa isla sufrirá una crisis humanitaria como consecuencia del paso del huracán María. Debido a la destrucción de infraestructuras, la población posee acceso limitado al agua potable y alimentos y sufre cortes de electricidad. Se calcula que se requerirán unos 10.000 millones de dólares para reconstruir la nación caribeña. Escuchemos estos datos en la voz de nuestra colega Lucía Córdoba de Telesur.
El huracán María, considerado la peor catástrofe en la historia de la Perla del Caribe, arrasó con todo a su paso. Miles de hogares, estadios, establecimientos comerciales, infraestructura telefónica, eléctrica y de agua potable, y otros espacios como el Aeropuerto Internacional Luis Muñoz Marín, sufrieron la fuerza de vientos de 260 kilómetros por hora y aguaceros imparables durante varios días de la semana pasada, que generaron graves inundaciones. Justo ahora sigue una alerta y evacuaciones por desbordamientos en las represas de Toa Baca y Oaxaca, esta última construida en 1929. El gobernador de la isla, Ricardo Rosselló, ha dicho que además de asistencia humanitaria, la isla caribeña está urgida de ayuda financiera, más aún considerando que la deuda que arrastra es del doble de su Producto Interior Bruto. Rosselló pide al Congreso de Estados Unidos apruebe un paquete de ayudas proporcionales. Más del 80% de los cultivos quedó anegado, lo cual hace intuir que el paso del huracán hará todavía más dependiente a la isla en términos agroalimentarios. Adicionalmente, es complejo distribuir alimentos hasta los lugares de expendio y hasta refugios en los cuales permanecen más de 10.000 personas. El gobierno decretó toque de queda por varios días. No obstante, los habitantes hacen a diario largas filas en las gasolineras para intentar recargar combustible. Hasta comienzos de esta semana funcionaba 60% de la telefonía fija y apenas 27% de la plataforma para telefonía móvil había sido levantada. Las autoridades aseguraban que 40% de los usuarios de agua potable tenían el servicio restablecido. La ciudadanía, ya golpeada por la crisis económica que arrastra desde hace una década, exige respuestas. Y hay quienes, antes que aguardar por soluciones gubernamentales, prefieren sumarse al éxodo. Aerolíneas tienen listas de espera de hasta 20.000 personas interesadas en emigrar. Donald Trump, presidente de Estados Unidos, país que mantiene en situación de colonia a esta Antilla Mayor, dijo que está en problemas profundos por el colapso que generó tanta devastación, pero lamentablemente tendrá igual que lidiar con el pago de miles de millones de dólares que le debe a Wall Street y bancos. Se espera que el próximo martes el magnate esté en persona en la isla. Contrariamente, Cuba envió ayuda el fin de semana y el presidente venezolano Nicolás Maduro aseguró en su última locución de lunes, desde el Palacio de Miraflores, que ha ordenado a su equipo un plan especial de apoyo y solidaridad activa.
La reforma de código laboral en Francia ha generado una oleada de protestas por parte de trabajadores, sindicatos y otras organizaciones. Sergio Rodrigo viene con los detalles.
Francia sigue inmersa en una nueva jornada de protesta. Desde hace semanas la indignación contra la reforma del código laboral sigue generando el malestar de los ciudadanos que la rechazan de forma firme, sobre todo porque no ha pasado tampoco por el Parlamento francés, ha sido bajo decreto y bajo la firma de Emmanuel Macron y su Consejo de Ministros, quien ha aprobado alguna de esas ordenanzas de la reforma del Código Laboral. Hoy, de nuevo, los trabajadores del transporte siguen en huelga, apoyado por los sindicatos CGT y FO, que siguen mostrando su apoyo a un sector básico que durante todo el día han bloqueado, por ejemplo, refinerías, plantas gasísticas o incluso también han bloqueado algunas autopistas, arterias principales de este país, para mostrar que son los trabajadores la fuerza económica de este país y no las grandes empresas que, según los sindicatos, se van a ver beneficiadas por estas ordenanzas que ya han entrado en vigor. Por ejemplo, entre las medidas que se pretenden aprobar por parte del nuevo ejecutivo francés se incluye, por ejemplo, la eliminación de los códigos colectivos, es decir, de los acuerdos entre sindicatos y empresas que protegen a los trabajadores. Ahora se pueden hacer, por ejemplo, contratos individuales, por ejemplo, también se pueden hacer acuerdos individuales que violarían esos acuerdos históricos. Es por ello que los sindicatos insisten que se está perdiendo el poder de la fuerza sindical y para ello insisten en la movilización y la huelga, y para ello llaman de nuevo para el próximo 10 de octubre en una gran marcha aquí en París, donde quieren que se rechace esta ley del trabajo que, insisten los sindicatos, da un paso atrás en los derechos de los franceses en torno a los 60 años.
La embajadora de Nicaragua ante Naciones Unidas, María Rubiales de Chamorro, intervino ante la Asamblea General apuntando a temas importantes para la humanidad. Escuchemos un fragmento.
Señor presidente, enfoquémonos en la necesidad de erradicar la pobreza. La Agenda 2030 de Desarrollo Sostenible representa uno de los logros más importantes en la historia de esta organización, como marco de lucha por un orden mundial justo, para que juntos y juntas, en paz, solidaridad y complementariedad, avancemos en la erradicación de la pobreza. Es lamentable que tanta pobreza aún persista y que las desigualdades sean ahora más marcadas que nunca. Pero esta agenda de desarrollo no tendrá ningún significado para nuestros pueblos sin una voluntad política, un compromiso y la solidaridad entre nosotros, los pueblos del mundo, para impulsar el desarrollo humano con justicia social y políticas ambientales que protejan el planeta en armonía con la naturaleza, asegurando la sobrevivencia de la especie humana, la vida y los derechos de la Madre Tierra. Señor presidente, después de 72 años, nuestra organización no ha logrado aún cumplir cabalmente con los objetivos planteados en su Carta Magna. Ante esta lamentable situación, es urgente un llamado a la refundación. Para ello debemos propiciar las transformaciones indispensables a fin de que nuestra organización sirva a los intereses de la humanidad. Queremos destacar que durante la presidencia de esta Asamblea en el año 2008 del padre Miguel de Escoto, que en paz descanse, a quien llamamos con toda justicia el canciller de la dignidad de Nicaragua, desarrolló y luchó hasta el final precisamente para esta refundación, sentando las bases para la discusión de estas transformaciones. En este sentido, es inaplazable, señor presidente, realizar las reformas del Consejo de Seguridad de las Naciones Unidas, asegurando que su composición y función reflejen las realidades geopolíticas y económicas de la comunidad internacional del siglo XXI. Es apremiante que las negociaciones entren en una fase más dinámica. Es urgente elaborar un texto de negociación para alcanzar las convergencias requeridas y proceder con estas reformas durante la 72ª sesión de esta Asamblea General.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, del colectivo Más Voces, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV, de Venezolana de Televisión y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Doshtri y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Tune in on Fridays at 6 p.m. for a brand new show, Music in the Mail. Ready for some new music? Curious about musicians out there who have not been noticed and deserve attention? Also music you don't hear anywhere else on the airwaves. Music in the Mail will shine the light on some of the best bands and artists that send their music to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Tune in. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, Fridays at 6 p.m.
Treat tonight. This is Quinoa with DJ Crustacean on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM or some long crazy streaming address that you can get via word of mouth for all of y'all not in Santa Cruz at you can call in at 831-427-3772 if you would like to request some glitchy, wompy, nasty bass or shitty top 40. Or, hey, how about your bad folk punk EP? I would love to hear it, maybe. Alright, I'm going to get back to this. And in a second, we're going to actually have some shit that smashes. But here's something that's still good.
Bye. I'm a motherfucking beast, I'm a motherfucking hog. Pull up with the slump, or should I say black truck, sounding like I got an alligator in the back. Paint better than Milton Ice, rallying hockey stripes, burning rubber at every light. Be mugging like fuck your life, I be hustling all day and night. Pushing all night and day, twisting and whipping, yay. Getting my guapalay, salute with my glue to my paint. Then I get in my way, from the A to L, A to the A, to stay to L, A to the A, this worldwide nigga that's fixed to have you be here, you be here. You ain't gotta like me, but you gotta respect. Woke up early in the morning and threw one in the air. Got so hot, thought about running for mayor. Slapped myself to make sure I was still there. Shit showered and shaved, and then I clapped my hair.
If your radio is...
Put a pounding on the money. I'm on your bitch with ass like a real star hip hop buddy.
Turn the volume up.
Drop your bitch in this collective sack, my man.
Turn the volume up. This is.
Sometimes I dress high class, sometimes I dress bummy, bummy. If it ain't about no cash,
but you better hurry. If I'm hot to marry, my attitude is bitchy, cause my period is heavy.
Try to stop me, I suggest that they duck. Cause when I get the bucket, I can assure you it's nothing plus. My arsenal game is ears with West and all kind of weapons. Even if you have chest protection, the trauma plate won't work. Cause I'ma aim at your head, aim at your head. I ain't gonna aim at your stretch. A lot of these bitch ass niggas should be wearing a skirt. With a box of Motrin and some maxi pass and they purse. Pillow talking and biting pillows. Acting like some brethren. A whole bunch of that sucker shit, a bunch of popsicles. I should have been a dwarf cause I'm still.
Oh my god. God, that was the bleep bloop refix of E40 My Shit Bang. Fun fact, I don't have any background music on. Hold on. Where? Bleep bloop is a DJ out of Sonoma County, California. I know, funny dubstep from Sonoma County. It's weird. But it's him remixing E40. Really exciting. Anyway, this is a really special episode of Keenwomp, because this is actually the second to last episode for a while. So if you're listening, listen harder, please. I also would love to...
You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM or freakradio.org if you're on your computer. Coming up next, today on September 28th, 2017, it's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. 2 hours of, well, lots of interviews today. We have interviews with Wes White, Keith McHenry, Peggy Lee Kennedy, and, Michael Rhodes, assuming we can fit everyone in here snugly, as well as other updates, so don't go away.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Press your observation in. Sing It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle.
Begin the interviews this morning with an attempt to reach Peggy Lee Kennedy, who's an activist down in the Venice Santa Monica area, who's been struggling with discrimination against homeless folks parked near the valuable coastal properties, as well as we've done past discussions with her on fighting back against the right to have access by vendors, poor people and entertainers, to the beachfront area, the wharf areas. Let's see if we can reach her. Well, we got it ringing. Let's see what happens now. Supposed to be able to reach her at this time.
You have reached 310-365-0.
This is Peggy Kennedy's number, so perhaps we're catching, she's trying to call us and we're trying to call her.
If you want a response. If you absolutely cannot text and you want a response, then you might want to try calling back.
And we'll probably be trying that.
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Hey, Peggy, we're trying to get through to you. I'm at 831-423-4833, so get back to me if you can. Until we can get through to her, which may not be till later in the show, if at all, I'm going to read some stories from Los Angeles, which is the greater metropolitan area where Venice of Santa Monica is located down south. This is a story from, it says, it's an online story by LA Rules Against Sleeping Overnight to be enforced today. And it's from a website called lacurb.com, which may indicate, I'm not sure what it indicates, but here's what the story reads. Enforcement of new regulations targeting homeless people who live in their vehicles will start today. And this is as of many months ago, February 6th of this year, reports KPCC. The new rules dictate where people living in RVs and cars can park. For example, parking for habitation purposes on residential streets from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m. is now banned, which, of course, is exactly the exact opposite of the Lapis Road situation down or up here in the along the outside marina in Monterey County to our south, where you can actually park finally for at least for a brief period of time during the night. Brief meaning that we got 2 months left of the Board of Supervisors agreement to allow the Lapis Road RVs to stay there, but they have to be gone during the day. This is the exact opposite down in Santa Monica. And, of course, the objectives in both cases seem to be to severely burden and, in fact, discourage homeless vehicular habitation, even though there are no other facilities for them at all. And living in a vehicle, this article continues, is prohibited at all times within one block or 500 feet of schools, preschools, daycare facilities, and parks. Again, the indication that, I don't know, you want to hide the reality of poverty from children and from young people? You want to provide an insulated environment? Or are you saying that homeless people are dangerous criminals or threats to children? In any case, it's the wrong approach. Results from the 2016 homeless count, the article says, found more than 7,000 people live in their cars in Los Angeles. City officials tell KPCC, radio station down there presumably, that the new rules are geared toward helping car and RV dwellers find appropriate places to post up. This, of course, is the constant refrain of those who are main job, is they feel, is to get rid of the homeless from visible places, because it unnerves, frightens, annoys, disgusts those who are more privileged. In other words, it's a lie that's being used to cover up an evil policy. And it's a form of cynical hypocrisy as well. Mayor Eric Garetti's homelessness policy director, Elisa Orduna, says the new rules can help service providers connect with people who are living in cars so that they can offer them vouchers for housing and motel stays. I hopefully will be asking Peggy just how many vouchers they're actually offering and for how long, because a person who at least has an RV has a place to stay, a toilet to use, a sink to wash up in so they can keep clean and avoid the menace of hepatitis A, a place of privacy that they can retreat from, and a place to be away from direct contact with the public so the public doesn't start yowling that there's a homeless person on the streets there and either starts feeling guilty or starts feeling angry, or in some cases starts feeling, what can we do about this? And puts more pressure on politicians. The article concludes, but homeless advocates argue the new rules basically constitute a ban on living in vehicles, and note the rules would not apply if the people who reside in cars and RVs were simply to exit their vehicles and sleep in tents on the street. The new restrictions are valid until July 2018, at which point city officials will evaluate how effective they've been. This is the city's second attempt to control car and RV dwellers. The previous attempt was shot down in a federal appeals court in 2014. The issue with that ordinance was that it was broad enough to cover any driver in Los Angeles who eats food or transports personal belongings in his or her car. That was, I believe, the Desert Rain decision. Yet it appears to be applied only to the homeless, as one judge wrote in his opinion. So I've got Peggy on the line. Hi, Peggy. Peggy Lee Kennedy.
Hi.
And I've been reading, Peggy, from this article, L.A. Rules Against Sleeping Overnight in Cars Will Be Enforced Starting in February. It's an older story. And then there was an earlier story that I read, which actually I don't know if I've read it or not, but it's one that attracted my interest. As L.A.'s homeless population surges, tow companies refuse to tow RVs. But you sent me some articles that I wasn't quite able to assimilate before showtime. But what's going on in Santa Monica and Venice that concerns you as a homeless advocate?
Since, let's say, November 2007... I realized that the city of Los Angeles had not followed state law in getting a coastal development permit approved to close the beach. So this was around the overnight permit parking ordinance. I was trying to find out about the coastal permit process for that, and I found out they didn't have a permit for the curfew for the beach closure at that time. And so I filed a complaint because the Coastal Commission, they in fact said they suspected there was one, but they didn't know about it.
And actually, let me interrupt you, Peggy. This was your response to a restrictive ordinance that was passed 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, well, the curfew is, I believe, 88. It's a long time ago. I don't know what year the curfew was actually enacted.
And what was the curfew? Describe that for us.
Okay, so the beach curfew closes the beaches of the city of Los Angeles from midnight until 5 in the morning, which any mass closure, substantial closure of coastal access requires a permit from the Coastal Commission. That is state law. State law. The city of LA did this without getting permission. And the closure is pretty substantial, so probably the Coastal Commission wouldn't have approved midnight till 5 in the morning. But
what was the response of the Coastal Commission to your action in 2007?
Okay, so in 2007, the original executive director, Peter Douglas, was in office there. So the commission has basically two parts. The Coastal Commission has two parts of it. They have the commissioners, which are all basically political, and they're appointed, some governor, some other. And then there's this whole set of staff, and the staff, executive director, which is the highest position, with Peter Douglas. And Peter Douglas wrote some scathing letters to the city of LA and basically threatened to do a cease and desist if they didn't go through the process and get a permit for this beach closure, which was very good for us. Unfortunately, he had a relapse of cancer and then had to resign and then later died. It was very quite sad, and in fact people said they were going to pave the coast once he died because he was very active and helped write the Coastal Act.
I remember that, Peggy. Let me ask you, has that actually happened as a consequence of his absence from the Coastal Commission, or has they're working on it?
Definitely, they're definitely paving the coast, all of the green space in LA. I know for sure during their building to the edge of the very inch edge of the lot. It's crazy. The trees don't matter. Green space doesn't matter. So they are, in fact, paving our part of the coast down here. I know they
are. What about your specific concern about stopping the curfew unless they have a Coastal Commission permit? Has that gone forward?
Well, yes. So what happened is that we have been, ever since 2007, November 2007, the effort to get action from the Coastal Commission after Peter Douglas passed has been pretty limp. The Coastal Commission has been very limp over the whole thing. There's been a few letters, and then the city attorney writes them a letter back and basically says, screw you, we don't need to get your stupid permit. And then, you know, the Coastal Commission is polite. So it's very limp. That's what's been going on the whole time.
What about police enforcement of the curfew? Has that altered at all?
No, it's horrible. Well, they used to raid the whole beach and arrest people for it, but now they give them these infraction tickets. So over the years it's altered, but it's primarily targeting homeless people or people who they consider undesirable after midnight. If you're a hipster or yuppie or whatever, you're not going to get one of these tickets. The likelihood of you getting a beach curfew ticket is very slim, but if you're homeless, you're going to get one.
Now, has anybody attempted to demonstrate the selective enforcement? Because I know that you have been out there with your video camera as far as RVs go, and you know that was some years ago. You reported on how you were trying to expose the policies of the city that were discriminatory. Have you been doing that also on the beaches, or has anybody been doing that?
Oh, yeah, longer, a little bit, just slightly longer than the RVs, actually. It's sort of the same. It took place around the same time because the overnight permit parking, after I filed multiple complaints with the Coastal Commission, one of which was the beach curfew not having a permit. That law requires a coastal permit. And so after that, it looked like they were going to put these overnight permit parking districts in, wink and a nod. But then I, hopefully my complaints created a situation where they had to get a coastal permit to put in the overnight permit parking, which was all about getting rid of the RVs, the oversized vehicles, at night. But they lost. At the Coastal Commission, they lost. It's an unfortunate situation because now these OPDs, overnight permit parking districts, are all over the city. And
that's also, that's all, Peggy, that's also the case in Santa Cruz. And I believe it's happening up at, well, I don't know if it's, I think at Lapis Road in the Marina area, South County.
Are those permit, or are those just oversized? Because oversized is another law that...
Yeah, I think these are no parking for anybody, but I think that the, I haven't determined it, but I'm asking if the Lapis Road people are in the coastal zone. I've sent them the maps, and hopefully they will begin to research that and find out what's going on. It takes a while to get things rolling, particularly when you have to move every day. I was pointing out before you called in that, or that before, yeah, before I reach, before you reached me, that the law in Los Angeles that's, that, you know, requires you to be off the streets during the day. It's the exact, exactly, I'm sorry, at night in Los Angeles, or in that is different than in, is exact opposite, is it here down in North Monterey County, where you have to be gone during the day from Lapis Road. And so one of the problems I'm having
here...
Yeah,
they can't do that in the coast without a permit.
Well, if we...
So the key is substantial. Is it substantial, reducing access or denying access?
Well, that's the law, as you stated. Yes. But with your sympathetic director gone, is that still likely to be the situation that the Coastal Commission will decide it? And we know that last year it did make a positive decision regarding at least not rubber stamping the city of Santa Cruz's attempt to ban RVs at night. But is it also...
Well, I don't know. You know, like I said, limp, limp, limp. Mm-hmm. They have been, the Coastal Commission has been so limp. So let me tell you how we got the city of L.A. to even initiate this permit process, which is happening... The first public hearing is happening this coming, the 4th. The 5th is a Thursday. I'm sorry, the 5th, Thursday night. And it was a lawsuit. It had nothing to do with the Coastal Commission writing letters to the city of L.A. A judge said to the city they have to get a coastal permit from a lawsuit. That's the craziest thing. So now they're getting a permit exactly. They're not limiting the hours. They're just and they're still enforcing the law. And they're just getting this permit out of whatever because this judge told them to, and they don't care. They're still enforcing the law.
So is this a permit that's being done through their local coastal authority or through the
yes.
broader commission?
Well, it's a weird thing because they have this local, it's the only municipality in the state that has this weird process because they went halfway through getting a local coastal plan, which Santa Cruz does, Santa Cruz County does, but the city of L.A. does not have a local coastal.
Well, the reason I ask that, I'm going to cut through the details because my problem is I'm really time limited. I also have with me. I mean, I have a.
Yeah, they have to. They're doing it internally. It's going to end up in front of the Coastal Commission, and we have to fight it when it gets there because internally it'll be rubber stamped.
Okay, because that in fact is what happened in Santa Cruz. They rubber stamped it, but the Coastal Commission overturned the local coastal situation. I have with me, by the way, in the room, Wes White and Dredd, who are two activists from the Salinas area who've been recently working with the Lapis Road RV folks. And my audience probably knows more about that than you may because we've been covering it in some detail. And
I've been following it a little bit.
Good. What I'd like to do is we're going to do a kind of a 2-minute hello thing, because I've got an interview with Mike Rhodes scheduled in 7 minutes or something like that.
Do you want to go to them and let me go?
Well, I'm going to let you go in 2 or 3 minutes, but what I want to do, if you're going to be around later, I can try and call you to continue this conversation.
Okay.
But although you may have hit some of the main points, which is this hearing coming up, and also, is there much legal muscle? I know you've been, and you have some ties with Carol Sobel, who's a strong attorney whose work on the Jones case at least overturned somewhat the Skid Row harassment of the homeless at night, although I guess you were using other ordinances after that, 2007.
Okay, so let me tell you, this beach curfew is the city of L.A. has created this parks law, and they have deemed that the beach is a park. They define the beach as a park, so it's in the parks law, and we're trying to fight the permit process. Even though we've been trying to get them to do a permit all these years, now we don't want, we want them to deny the permit. So that is a battle that we are trying to rally right now. And as far as the oversized vehicle ordinance or the parking, it's like a huge disaster in the city of L.A. It's a disaster.
And I want to talk about those in more detail, but let me introduce you to Wes White. Hello, Wes.
Hello, how are you doing?
Hey, Wes.
Right on, nice to meet you. So you're having a hard time down in L.A. area, huh?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So,
Evil city run by Democrats.
Oh my! Well, they're just Republican in sheep's clothing, right? You know, they're two sides of the same shit dipped coin.
Yeah.
Language, Wes. Language, for heaven's sake.
Don't you love it?
Yes. We're talking with Peggy Lee Kennedy. We got Wes White here, and Dredd snapping photos from a distance. I'm going to call you back, I hope, later on. Though this, I may try to reach you for the Sunday show, but we'll have more time. This is a 2-hour show. Sunday, it goes on and on, and we can actually...
Anytime.
You know.
I'm sorry if I didn't answer. I was on the road.
God, that's... Well, then I'll call you when you aren't, or maybe I'll catch you when you are, and you'll answer.
Call me anytime.
All right. Thank you, Peggy. And how can people get more information about this? Are there articles online if people want to follow it?
Yeah, well, we have a Facebook page, the Venice Justice Committee, but you can request to become a member. It's a closed page, so we don't want to care.
Sure.
If you join, you can join, but we'll check you out before we put you on. But we're posting everything there, and we just don't accept haters on our Facebook page. So.
Well, I hate those politicians, but I don't hate you.
Justice Committee. It's a Facebook page.
Venice Justice Committee Facebook, and get in touch with Peggy Lee Kennedy.
Yeah, just have to be added as a member, and as long as you're not a hater, we'll put you on.
All right, well, you got to hate the right kind of things, you know what I mean. Anyway, I will talk to you again.
All right, peace, man.
Take care, Ed. So I'm now going to, kind of as I hustle along, going to call Mike Rhodes, who's an activist with the Community Alliance and various other groups in Fresno, where there is a camping ban that has recently been passed that, I don't know if it actually mirrors. We'll learn more about the specifics of this ban, presumably, when we talk to him, if I can get him on the phone.
Right.
Hopefully he will answer.
Appointment.
Hey, Robert.
Michael Rhodes. Or should I call you Mike?
That is what most people call me.
Well, I'm here in Felton with a couple of Salinas actives. You may remember the video bug. I think his name is Wes White. Say hello, Wes.
Yeah, I know Wes.
Yeah, right on, Mike. How you doing, man? I'm keeping up on you.
And we also have the main man behind all this, Dredd. Hey, Dredd.
Hello, man. How you doing?
And we just talked to Peggy Lee Kennedy in Santa Monica, Venice. Have you ever had much conversation with her?
No, I have not.
Yeah, she's fighting via the Coastal Commission, which is kind of far removed from Fresno, to use the Coastal Commission's requirements to stop the criminalization of people in vehicles and also curfews on beaches that are primarily used against folks outside or homeless folks, or, if you will, to be politically correct, people experiencing homelessness. Now,
well, how's that going?
She called late, so I didn't get a really clear picture of it. I'm hoping to get a longer discussion on Sunday or maybe later in this show. But it's something like she's fighting a hearing coming up to deny them a coastal permit, first by initially trying to require them to get one, and then moving to show that they shouldn't be getting one because they're presumably their access is insufficient for the RVs there, if they're talking about RVs or vehicles, or they're in some way also limiting access that affects the entire community, not just the homeless community, but does affect the homeless community too, and therefore it requires stiffer safeguards. But the reason I called you has to do with some tumultuous activity you're planning for tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned permits because the city of Fresno has been pushing us to get a permit for the protest we're having at City Hall tomorrow evening, where we're protesting the no camping ordinance that's just been passed. And they have been pushing for us to get a permit to camp out at City Hall overnight, and my feeling has been that I don't want a permit because I want us to be in the same position that homeless people are in every day. I don't want us to get arrested. I don't want any homeless people to get arrested for sleeping on the streets of Fresno. And so they were pushing this idea to get a permit, and I finally yesterday told them, okay, I'll get a permit, but I want it for 1 year. And so they were, not surprisingly, not interested in modifying the one-day permit to being a year. They said that that would create a homeless encampment at City Hall, and they didn't want that.
Heaven.
But so now they're kind of back to threatening us with arrest. Mentioning that. There's sprinklers that might come on in the middle of the night.
Wait.
Without a permit, we have liability. Without a permit, they're not going to authorize any portable toilets to be put up out there. And on and on. So they're sort of taking a more hostile stance to our protest at this point.
Well, I know that Wes, for 6 months, had an encampment outside City Hall every night, which you supported, by storing people's stuff during the day. How to get this?
Yeah.
I'm negotiating with a phone and an audio recorder here. Wes, any advice for Mike? Although, of course, I'm sure Fresno has its own arcane restrictive regulations.
Well, the one big deal on that, I mean, I love your approach on that, but obviously you poked the bear and threw a rock at the hornet's nest. But the year thing, I that's fantastic. I love that. And that's actually how we did it. We did it legally within the bounds of the law. They had 6 to 6. It was allowed. Now they're coming back with 7 to 7, where yet you can't be within 300 feet of city structures, including City Hall being the first and foremost. But that's your place of grievance, permit or not. You still got it no matter what. As well as, obviously, now they're going to fight you tooth and nail.
Let me ask you about this new ordinance in Salinas, Wes. What does it allow people to camp at night if anywhere in the city on public property or nowhere on the city or 300 feet from a building or what?
I kind of imagine that it's more to legitimize the people in Chinatown to say, okay, fine, we'll leave you alone overnight. But the rest
of the town, for those who don't know, is the nearby streets where folks are camped on the sidewalks.
But don't forget, we came here to talk about Fresno, not Salinas.
Well, we came to talk about cities across the country, and we have at least three of them under the focus. But what is this Fresno camping ban that you are? Is this the specific ordinance that this protest is designed to combat?
Right. It came up pretty quickly. They've had camping ban ordinances proposed before in the city of Fresno, and each time it comes close to a vote, they've pulled it. But this time it came up very quickly. There was a public hearing on it. Lots of people spoke out against it, and then it was passed on a 6-1 vote. And what it does is this. It makes it illegal for anybody to sleep on public or private property with the threat of 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. So the way they push this at city...
Before you get into that, Mike, is the word sleep actually the criterion for enforcement?
Yeah, I have to go back and look in the... you know what it is? I know you're probably familiar with the Sacramento no camping ordinance.
I'm not, but
It's modeled after theirs, and I can't recall the language specifically right now, but, you know, I know where you're going with that, but the ordinance effectively targets homeless people that are sleeping out at night. It's not targeting cars or people living in garages or anything like that. It's people who are, you know, sleeping out, you know, wherever. And so what this does is, and the way they pushed it was, well, this gives the police one more tool in their toolbox so that they can go and approach a homeless person and encourage them to get the social services that they need. And if they're resistant to that, then they would use the arrest option.
Well, you know, I've heard that as much as I've heard the menace to children, keep them away from schools. There's the needle mania approach. They got needles everywhere. Then there's the poo-poo and the pee-pee. But, I mean, in terms of social services, if you were to talk factually, what kind of social services are available in Fresno? Yeah. For shelter, for instance.
Right. And how effective is it?
Inadequate. And that's what came up in the public hearings time and again is, yeah, you can say that the intention of this ordinance is people into housing, which is what they claim, but the fact is that it's just not available. There's no, you know, there is not adequate housing. So you could not find housing for the thousands of people that are on the street.
Well, I know you've Mike, I know you've written about this, but do you actually have updated figures on the actual available housing available, let's say, tomorrow night when the, you know, the police are going to come and say, there's all kinds of wonderful social services. Are you going to say, wait a minute, these are the figures, or are you going to say, well, we think there is inadequate housing, you know, what are you going to do there?
Well, there is a report out by the city and the Continuum of Care here, which identifies the housing options that are available. And, yeah, they have numbers there, you know, and it's, you know, we're just so low on the numbers of beds we have or the apartments that are available for people to be moved into. If you get, if somebody was to say, okay, yeah, give me housing, don't arrest me, give me housing, what they're going to do is they're going to take them down to this, the Favarello house where they have a, computer and a office where they put everybody's information into their system, and that they're, you know, what they say they want to do is to then get people the resource. You know,
well, this is the waiting list gambit, as we call it, right?
Well, it will be because it's not going to result in housing immediately because it's just not available. People get put on a list, and they might be on a list for months, years before anything is available. So, but that's their approach to it, is they're going to
This is the doghouse land, as I remember from some years ago talking to you, where they have these sort of wretched sheds that they provide. That's the housing that they'll be waiting for, are these sheds?
Yeah, they're tool sheds. No heating, no cooling. Two people per shed, and there's no toilets in the sheds. And it gets extremely hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. And that is, you know, that would be one option that they would tell people that is available. Of course, those sheds are pretty much maxed out all the time anyway. But even if they were available, there are people who would have good reason not to even want to stay there.
Okay, but you know, it's interesting. I got a call last night that the Santa Cruz homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, which abandoned Meals for the Homeless 2 years ago, abandoned emergency shelter 2 years ago, and has set up fences and guards around its property. But there were people who would sleep outside on the sidewalk. They have now been essentially told if their property is there during the day, it will be confiscated. That's apparently the word they got last night, according to a report from activist Keith McHenry, who went down there because there's a massive cleanup operation reportedly in the works here in Santa Cruz over the weekend. And so I'm wondering, wasn't there a cleanup operation outside Pavarello House recently where they drove people away? And isn't this actually in the face or in the teeth of the successful Kincaid lawsuit of 2006-2007, where you wrested $2.3 million and some kind of injunction from the city to stop them from seizing homeless property? And is that still going on? Is that a part of this concern you're doing tomorrow? What's happening with that?
Well, it's unclear how the city is going to proceed on Friday in implementing this new policy. I suspect they're going to be aggressive about it. I've heard reports all over the city that the police are threatening homeless people with arrest if they don't throw their property away and move out. We won't know until it happens what changes are going to take place. But even right now, the way that it is pretty bad, because there's a whole task force in the police department focused on the homeless. They've got, I think, four or five officers that's their full-time job, is to find homeless people, rouse them out of wherever they are, and if there is property that is not being attended to at that moment, they call in city sanitation who comes and hauls it away.
Surely you mean that these police officers are concerned with finding them housing and services and encouraging them not to be service-resistant. Isn't that, in fact, what you're really saying, Mike? Aren't you bad-mouthing your good mayor? What's his name, anyway?
Lee Brand. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was recently elected mayor. Well, look, call it what you will, the city has the resources to pay for officers, police officers, to go and break up any encampment that starts to take place, bring out the city sanitation department, and take their property. I've heard recently that there is a change that's taking place, that they're now taking and immediately destroying people's property. Now, that has to be documented like we did in the Kincaid class action lawsuit. We want to get some of the officers on video doing this. And we are just in the early phases of what's going to roll out starting tomorrow. And we do have attorneys we're working with. And we will be asking homeless people who, if they do get arrested or if they do get harassed under this new law, to document that and tell us what's going on. And we have several legal groups that are interested in looking at this and challenging it, not only in Fresno, but in places like Sacramento and any place else where there's a no-camp camping ban.
Well, Mike, you know, you came to Santa Cruz 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago. You know, and I guess, Wes, you were the videoing his presentation downtown. You know, it was a big hoop-de-doo. And there was, you know, there were conversations I had with you over the years, including well-documented, you know, the history you've created of the repression of the homeless in Fresno in your book, Dispatches from the War Zone. This issue was supposedly resolved in 2006, 2007, and then attorneys were supposed to be going after it when the injunction, I guess, expired or they were violating it. You know, and now I'm hearing, you know, oh, we're meeting with attorneys. Oh, we're going to try to document. I mean, this sounds like something you were telling me 2 years ago. What has anything happened in those 2 years? And the reason I'm saying this is I get the same story from local activists who also are trying to work with Tristia Bauman of the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty, Steve Plaich's Homeless Legal Assistance Project. It sounds like a lot of talk. I mean, reassure me.
Well, as you know, one has to be always vigilant, and you can't just say, okay, we did it, it's over, done, and everything's okay now. Because, hey, as is evidenced by what's going on here in Fresno, they're going to keep coming up with new and creative ways of harassing homeless right. people and taking their property, and you have to stay on top of them. If you don't, then... You know, they're going to get away with it.
Well, my issue is, are they staying on top of it? And if so, how are they staying on top of it? I mean, you know, you and your daughter went out with a video camera, found attorneys, and got $2.3 million out of the city. And that took all of 2 or 3 years. We're now 10 years later, and of course, homelessness has gotten worse. They've destroyed the encampments under the bridges there, although in Oakland... You may be aware, you probably are, you know, they're actually trying to, at least to some extent, provide sanitation services for the encampments under the freeways that are, you know, multiplying like mushrooms. I say this from my own personal observation of the last couple of weeks when I was up there. And, Wes, you were up there at one time looking at one of the encampments, which I think was since was driven away. But then they just keep coming back, and they're growing. Are there encampments still in Fresno that are growing under the freeways and elsewhere? And are these folks going to come down and be supportive tomorrow, do you think? Or are they, in fact, should we say, nervous about confronting the police, or both?
I think everybody's a little nervous about what's going to happen tomorrow. There certainly is the threat of arrest because we don't have a permit. So anybody who comes realizes that they're risking arrest. I personally don't think that the city is going to arrest people at City Hall for this protest. But, you know, I think you have been arrested at your City Hall in Santa Cruz for sleeping out. So that's always a possibility.
Yeah.
What was the other part of your question?
Well, I'm wondering what the status of the actual encampments is in Fresno. And also, I know you personally and others who are working with, you know, the Kincaid lawsuit originally and then the follow-up, you know, provided porta-potties and trash pickups. You tried to get the city to do the same. I'm not sure how successfully. What's happening with that in terms of the actual survival encampments that are there?
Right, yeah. No, they've really been effective at busting encampments up. And it's just a matter of their constantly being on people whenever people come together and start building anything, they come and destroy it. So we now don't have any encampments in Fresno. What's happened is that people have gotten pretty good at... staying out of sight. So there's a lot of vacant houses in Fresno. People are living, you know, they go into those houses that are vacant or abandoned. They live in places that are very out of the way. There's some, you know, even in the city of Fresno, there's some vacant lots that have bushes, and there's canal banks, and there's lots of places where you can go and be out of the way. And so that's what's happened is people have gotten pretty good at finding places where they're not down to the demonstration tomorrow. Yeah, I think we'll have a pretty good showing of homeless people that are going to come out and join in this protest. And what I've heard from a number of people is that, hey, we really don't have anything to lose at this point, because even if we get arrested at City Hall tomorrow night, that's no different than the position we would be at no matter where we are. So this kind of a threat puts people in a position of having really nothing to lose.
So they would be looking at a misdemeanor trespass or camping, unlawful camping? What would they hit you with?
Violating a permit, perhaps?
I think what they would charge people with is this new camping ordinance, which says that you can't camp on public or private property, and that it is it's a misdemeanor, and you could get up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Will that happen? Will anybody get arrested, put in jail, and serve 6 months for this? We don't know.
Well, yeah, there's going to be a mandatory minimum, you know, administrative fees and minimum court costs. Ours is $220, and the real big ringer on this is the 3-year probation, promising that you will not commit a same or a similar offense in the next 3 years. You know, then you know you're automatically set up for that pipeline of prison issue.
What's the status, Mike, of the Fresno police? I've heard some rather frightening stories in the course of the last decade of talking with you on the phone. You know, even the possibility of, you know, police orchestrated murder of homeless people. Are police, for example, going after people who are squatting, as they say, in these abandoned buildings, the new strategy you suggest that's being used? Are you getting reports on how police are treating homeless people in custody? What's the story with that?
It varies. I think you remember Al Williams. He's been homeless in Fresno for many years. And he, in the area that he's at right now, is in the Pinedale area, which is kind of up north in a more affluent area. He says that there are some officers that are just like threatening him every day, looking forward to arresting him and taking him in when this new camping ordinance goes into effect. And there are other ones who are like, they'll buy him a hamburger and talk to him. So there's probably, like in any other profession, there's a range.
Yeah, that's not really my question, Mike. My question is whether once you're in custody, what's the general experience of people there? I mean, in other words, you're saying, well, they, you know, what difference does it make if you get arrested or not, because you're going to get hassled on the street? But it might make a considerable difference. I've never been arrested in Fresno. I was arrested in Sacramento, and it was no fun at all. Even though I was with a whole bunch of middle class people, the issue was a homelessness, and it was 20 years ago. But, and things may have changed a lot. But do you have any reports? Because I know you work on a new newspaper called the Community Alliance, which concerns itself with broader issues than simply homelessness and homeless civil rights.
Sure. Well, I've been arrested several times here for doing civil disobedience, and usually the process is that they take you in, they give you a citation, they process you, and release you. And oftentimes there's some kind of, if you don't do anything, you know, get arrested again.
Yeah, but you're white upper middle class with lots of political connections. I'm talking about a poor person on the street, maybe a person of color, who doesn't have any of that. What kind of accounts have you gotten from them?
Well, people who are homeless that get arrested, they're oftentimes, it's just a matter of them getting taken down to jail, held for 3 or 4 days, and then released. It's not a pleasant experience, but I haven't had any reports that people are being brutalized once they're in the Fresno County Jail.
Well, that's kind of reassuring, I guess. Wes, do you have any questions you have for Mike that you might or advice, given your own experience with 6 months of, legalized encampment, and then a lot of, you did some fighting to stop the Chinatown deportations in March or April of last year, and get into it.
Well, the one thing I would say is if anybody does get arrested, plead not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Take that thing all the way to trial. Make it a big public opinion case. You know, you can get a lot of the moral support that way. And I think there's really no legal basis other than, we changed the rule and so therefore it's legal. It doesn't really change the constitutionality. I mean, of our situation, which is the whole reason why we keep doing this, and that's going to shine through a lot easier. And as long as people keep on taking stuff to trial, they're going to quit and they're going to say, all right, fine, this ordinance ain't working because we're working too hard trying to push people into punishment.
That was our theory 27 years ago, and we actually I think did some pushback here in Santa Cruz on that. But another question I have for you, and I'll let you respond, of course, to Wes's remark. But is this a one-night stand, so to speak? I mean, are you going to go down there, do a nice little protest, and then everybody's going to go home? Or is it going to be a continuous thing? I know that I'm not one to talk. I'm not going to Fresno for this protest. I'm not even going down to Santa Cruz for the protest. But they're probably doing a lot of protesting over the weekend. Or I might be. I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, what Keith McHenry, who does these protests, has often said, and I think it's true, is you got to keep coming back again and again in a way that puts, you know, the screws to this kind of repression and ultimately encourages people to stand up. But, you know, that's hard for people to do, and it's hard for people to organize. What are your plans on that, if any?
Right. Well, I think this is a good place to start, that we get people together for one night where people are standing in solidarity with homeless people. There's a suggestion. I don't know if you remember in the 80s how people would go to El Salvador and Guatemala and accompany human rights activists that were active during the civil wars there. But it was a strategy to be with people, you know, all the time, so that they weren't attacked and killed. And that idea has come up here that, yeah, this is nice that we're doing this for one day, but really, whether we have a permit or not, it's not going to help people who are out on the streets the next day or week or month after that. And that there's some interest in people staying with the homeless to be witness to what happens and to try to prevent the city from, or the police from, arresting homeless people for the crime of sleeping in Fresno for the night. I don't know where that will go, Robert. One never knows what's going to come from actions that you do, but I think you start a spark and you hope that that continues and it ignites people's imagination and they go from there and take up other actions that are effective.
And you will be videoing this, of course, maybe hiring Wes. I understand his rate is $1,000 an hour now. He's a very...
that's cheap.
He's going to give you the discount rate. There'll be video that you'll be posting online of the outcome of this protest so that we can all sit at home and congratulate ourselves on what a wonderful protest it was and how we're very sympathetic from 100 miles away.
Great. I know there will be people there with cameras and video. People might be streaming it live. So I'm sure you'll be hearing from us about how this all went.
Good.
Is there much, just finally, I know you want to get out of here and you got a busy day. Are you have any time right now or not? What's your schedule look like?
Oh, I've got all kinds of things, you know, swirling around. I'm trying to get portable toilets over there, and I could see the companies trying to call me, and I got the police calling me as I'm talking to you. So I'm kind of in a whirlwind, but I'm certainly good for one more question.
Boy, I think I had it. I may have lost it. You have a question?
I can throw one other thing out, is that I think the next thing thing that's going to happen here if we don't, like, put a stop to all this is they're going to go after people who are providing homeless people with food and meals. We had one of our groups get confronted by, some government agency that came out and told her to stop providing homeless people with food because she doesn't have a kitchen facility that is been approved for that kind of food services. She doesn't transport it in the proper truck or van, and on and on and on. So I think that we think, yeah, this is terrible what's just happened with this camping ban, but I think that there are more things that are coming down the pipeline, and we have to be prepared for and confront as they come up.
Now, Food Now Bombs, I take it, isn't terribly active in Fresno.
Well, they're fairly active. There's two different Food Now Bombs groups.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Serve food at least 2 days a week.
Well, the next time I talk to you, maybe it'll be after this whole thing is over, so you'll have a breathing room, or maybe you'll be staying out there with homeless people, and I'll be able to catch you in the midst of it. See if you can give me an update on what's going on legally. I mean, it sounds like I got a pretty vague response from you on that, and I'm interested in knowing the specifics. When's the next court hearing? What's being done to try to implement the so-called, or to reinstitute the injunction, if there is? Has it been abandoned? Are the same legal people coming together to help, or are they not? And if you have any answer to that question now you want to put out, you can, but I know you're, get those toilets out, old man. What can I say?
Well, I'm kind of of two minds about the toilets. One is I think it would be nice to have them there, and I'll get them if I can. I mean,
For your house folks, they need it.
Talking to has been saying, well, since you didn't get a permit, we're not going to authorize you to put any toilets on City Hall property. You've chosen to engage in illegal activity at City Hall, and we're not going to authorize you to put them there. And my response to that is we're just going to put them there anyway if we can, and, see what you do.
Right.
Okay.
Sounds like a lot of shit to me.
What's cooling around right now is whether we can even get them. Even if we don't, the other part of me says, hey, this is how homeless people in Fresno live every day. They don't have toilets.
Well, tell people to bring their bottles, their Gatorade bottles.
Yeah.
And we may laugh about that, but that's what I saw happening last night, or the night before last. No, I guess it was Sunday. I saw a very kind of aggressive, angry homeless guy in an embarrassed way kind of pull off to the side and very carefully try to take a piss into a bottle along the encampment that was along our post office wall that was, is still there and is due to be removed on October 1st.
Nice. Well, it's a good thing at least he was containing it.
Well, but the point was, to me, what moved me was he was concerned about keeping a clean area. And this is a guy who's half the time drunk and who's gotten into fights. He's not your, ideal, model, Brent Adams Sanctuary Village homeless kind of guy, or the kind of person that the Homeless Lack of Services Center would give services to. But he's respecting the rights of the people around him. And that to me is, moves me.
Yeah.
Because I feel more reassured as a homeless person that I won't get attacked.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, any concluding words before we release you from bondage?
Well, let's be in touch and talk about how this thing went. I'll give you a report back in a week or so.
Yeah, I may try and do a three-way because I do have that phone capability. We'll put Weston on this again, and maybe we can get the observing and noting Dredd to get his own thoughts on this, too. He's taken pictures, and he's a witness to the whole thing. Anyway, thank you. And Mike, how can people get more information if they want on this, what's been happening, if they want to follow up on this?
Well, follow you, because you're going to be doing report backs. If they want to get in touch with me, I'll give my phone number. It's area code 559-978-4502.
One more time?
978 4502, area code 559.
And are you going to be posting something on Indie Bay or some other website, the Community Alliance website, or?
Yeah, you know, somebody asked me that yesterday, and I said I haven't thought about it because I'm just so involved in what I'm doing that documenting it and, you know, getting it out there is secondary. So I'm sure we will, but it's not on my mind right now.
Well, thanks, Mike. We've been talking with Mike Rhodes, the Fresno man. And good luck tomorrow.
Thanks, Robert. Talk to you soon.
All right.
When I was a young lad, sometimes I'd wonder what happened to time when it passed. Then one day I found out that time just lands in prison, and that it is held fast. When I was a young man, used to go courting and dream of the moon and the stars. The moon is still shining, the dreams, they are all broken. On these hard iron bars, look out of the window, over the roofs there, and over the walls, see the sky. Just one flying leap, and you could make your getaway. If only you could fly. The prison is sleeping, the night watch is keeping its watch over 700 men. And behind every cell door, a sleeping lag is dreaming. Oh, to be free again. Go write me a letter addressed to my number, but say you remember my name, so I'll be reminded of how the world outside goes and feel a man again. Got time on my hands, I've got time on my shoulders, plenty of time on my mind. There's no summer, no winter, when once you land inside here. Just that old prison grind.
And that was a number from Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger's early album, Cold Snap. It's called The Lag Song. It's actually sung by Ewan McCall, who reportedly wrote this song in 1965 for In Prison, a BBC documentary film on Strongway's prison in Manchester, England. You can find it online on YouTube. So earlier, I had activists Wes White and Dredd were here kind of helping me ask questions of Mike Rhodes and, I don't know, I guess maybe a little bit about Peggy Kennedy or from Peggy. Wes is now back in Salinas, but I've reached him by phone. Wes, you originally came to Santa Cruz for a variety of purposes, but one of them was to check in on the MH Can noon meeting that was supposedly happening today, right?
Yeah, that's correct. It did happen. It was for members only, so it was a closed meeting. I was interested and curious, I was directed to the City of Santa Cruz website, so I would assume it sounded like there was a lot of concessions they had to make, and they feel wrongfully accused and convicted, but here they are, and if they want to maintain being open, then they succumb to those further restrictions.
Now, have you had any prior interviews with either MHCAN members or MHCAN officials, directors, staff, and so forth?
Not really formally or anything, like, but I think I did call and just offer some support when I first heard about it and read about it. Offered some support, and I think at that time they were just like, well, you know, just stay a holding course. We're working on it, and that's about as far as I could go.
Did you ever get much information out of what I regarded as kind of the tight-lipped board of directors or Fuhrer director, head director, Steve Plaich?
What was the first part of that again?
Did you ever get much information from your inquiries in the past?
Not really. I think they were doing negotiation for a while. And then with this announcement saying that the Planning Commission meeting agenda item had been averted, which is definitely a relief, I don't think they had a chance. And that's how come they did this thing for noon, so they could tell all their residents first and their members, and then tell the public about it after that.
Well, I know that, of course, the issue has been what appears to be an attempt by a combination of police, a real estate agent, neighboring businesses, and other neighbors to shut down MHCAN, or at least to severely restrict it through a combination of surveillance and complaint. Although when I send in to the city for actual copies of complaints, I find the cupboard is bare. I don't get any, there's no clear complaints. But according to this, I got an email today which read, "Dear MHCAN supporters, I am happy," I've read this to you before, but I'm going to read it for the benefit of listeners. "I'm happy to report that MHCAN and the City of Santa Cruz have arrived at conditions in the use permit that are agreeable to both sides. This means that the Planning Commission hearing set for this Thursday, September 28th, is canceled. The conditions, including concessions on the part of MHCAN to arrive at a resolution that the board hopes will improve relations with the neighbors," apparently that's the big deal, "and increased dialogue." I don't hear know if there's been any problem with dialogue, more like surveillance and photos taken by police and restrictive pressure on MHCAN, such as cutting down the number of people that can go there from what I understand was an average several years ago of 200 down to 50, a vital resource to current and future MHCAN peers. For example, MHCAN has agreed," here we get a little inkling of what may have been revealed in that noon meeting that you were not allowed into, Wes, "has agreed to allow a security guard stand at the outside of the parking lot." A security guard stand. So they're going to have some sort of little, not a barracks perhaps, but a little picket post where, just to make sure that there's, I don't know what, no loonies running around on the property. This really bothers me. "Stand at the outside of the parking lot," and it also seems to me to be counterindicated to the what you're supposed to be doing, which is provide a healing environment for people who are going through some kind of crisis. But the city and county have agreed to fund the security guard, so the cop is going to be accountable to the city and the county, not to MHCAN. I suppose that they don't have to pay the money, but they get the shit anyway. MHCAN has agreed, and they get the shit without any accountability on the part of the security guard, because he is accountable to his city and county authorities. It's sort of like at City Hall when you have Parks and Rec Rangers and First Alarm security guards harassing freedom sleepers there. One hopes that that it's not equivalent to that, but the chain of authorities sounds to me like the same. MHCAN has agreed to remove the food pantry program and direct peers to other neighborhood pantries. In other words, no more food, go somewhere else. This is a sort of genteelly put. But peers are able to eat meals and snacks while they are on site. Just don't try to take away any food at the normal food distribution times that have been the regular source of sustenance in the past, apparently. Finally, this email reads, a planning commission hearing has been set for October of next year to request that after what we hope will be a year of calm and improved relations with the neighborhood, MHCAN can be permitted to expand hours and days and the number of people they can serve daily. Then there's a bunch of boilerplate. Thank you for your support and great advocacy on behalf of MHCAN. We obtained a copy of the support letters the city received, and there were a remarkable number from you all. Your support is invaluable, and we are so grateful. If you have specific questions, would like more information, feel free directly to reach out to me. Good luck. Sincerely, Steve Plaich, and he gives a phone number, 466-6078. I'm going to make more comments, but since I've been going without taking a breath, what's your thoughts, Wes?
It seems like things are, you know, as good as they're going to get. I mean, yeah, I know Steve may or may not be able to contact you. He may not be the best person to disseminate information. He's just one member on the board, and maybe he's not even the rep. I don't know.
Plaich is the chair of the board of directors.
He's the chair, but does he want a PR person to speak for it, or that's it? That letter is it, right?
Well, the letter is what I received, and I guess you got a different letter, which actually, this doesn't even mention that there's this noon meeting, or was this noon meeting today. It does mention, however, some of the substantive concessions they made, but no concessions on the part of the neighbors, such as, we will stop videoing you and your clients as you come out of the MHCAN. We will stop pressuring the management to harass you for being in a public space, sitting on a bench across the street. Such as we.
No, that's all legal. Are you kidding me?
I'm sorry.
I said that's all legal. They can do whatever they feel like.
Well, it depends. It's question is it legal to harass people who are, you know, trying to be peaceful in public spaces, but whom the neighbors don't want around because of their appearance, or because they have the suspicion that they might be a drug addict, or goodness, somebody with a mental illness diagnosis. No, I don't think that is legitimate. I don't know whether it's legal or not, but it sure as hell isn't legitimate. And there's no mention in this so-called resolution statement that the other side, the side that has been pressing MHCAN, according to what its clients keep telling us at the HUF meetings, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meetings, has been happening over the last 2 years. We don't get any, there's no indication that there is no crime problem around MHCAN. That the problem is the criminal bigotry that is being pressed upon them. And I don't, you know, there's no mention of that. It's all this kind of, well, we're giving up this, we're giving up that, and we certainly hope in a year we'll have another meeting about things, and then things will be better. Bothers me, but it sounds like it doesn't bother you that much, Wes. What do you think?
No, well, I now I understand what your angst and bother, frustration about working with them. The part that bothers me is exactly what you're talking about. They didn't mention any of the downside because what they have to do is kiss their butt right now. They can't afford to insult them or call them out on something. No, dude, you know, you need to call them out. That's the problem. So, you know, because it's all one-sided. We're the problem, not you guys. No. You guys made the problem.
See, the point is there was a meeting that was scheduled for today at 7 o'clock to discuss this issue in a public forum, but instead the board of directors has been meeting behind closed doors, you know, schmoozing with the police department, which is to some extent under the, I do not have ironclad evidence, this is my belief that Ken Deeg, who masterminded the end-all homeless parking in the around the Coral Street homeless lack of services center area on Fern, Limekiln, and Coral Streets, who went around from business to business soliciting permit parking closure petitioning. So he was the one who essentially prompted this. He's a paid employee of the police department, and he was also spotted doing surveillance work. His name is on some documents involved in this situation too, around MHCAN. So the idea that you can somehow ignore dangerously right-wing vigilante activity in collusion with the police department, I think, is frankly the road to fascism, if it isn't already a form of de facto fascism. where you have essentially people who are supposed to be impartial guardians of the law pushing their own reactionary agenda. Am I being too paranoid here? What do you think?
No, you're typically ahead of the curve, and that's probably why people come off saying that you ain't got no clue, but you're on top of a lot of things. The situation in Santa Cruz, man, dude, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it's so far away. The behind closed doors thing is definitely part of the problem. I wish they would say all the frustrations that they got with it, because they're actually placating the side that's trying to destroy them, and it's making it that much easier because they're not really offering much of a defense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in fact, people could, if they wanted tonight, to go down to the Planning Commission hearing and speak during the oral communications section. I don't think it's even on the agenda anymore. But the Planning Commission hearing is being held at the City Hall at 7 o'clock. And I don't know whether the oral communication comes at the beginning or the end of the hearing, but if people want to say this is a shabby and shameful way to treat a group, and it also has, as I've said numerous times on this show, really bad impacts on the internal management, because what it does is it encourages a sort of reflective, that is to say, a mirroring of this police state mentality inside, so that the MHCAN clients don't disturb the neighbors. So
the administration becomes the law enforcement agency, in effect,
right?
And abuse the very people they say they're there to help, because they're so scared of these, new regulations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm afraid that, you know, I, at the risk of offending Sarah Leonard, whom I like, but I feel she's surrendering far too much here. And part of it is, you know, out of the best of motives. And part of it is, oh, I can't because my lawyer tells me. And another part of it is, oh, because my board of directors has said. These should not be the primary bases for making these decisions, and particularly for excluding the public from public comment or discouraging the public. I mean, if this were really this noon meeting where a bunch of MHCAN activists and clients...
Members. I would assume they live there, but I don't know for sure.
If they were meeting on an equal basis to make a decision about this, I would understand why you might want to close the meeting, depending on the wishes of the clientele. But I think my fear is that what happened there, and I have to find out by, you know, snooping around and asking people. My fear is that they simply gave the word from on high to the clients and said, take it or leave it. You know, that they didn't say, would you like us to do this? Would you like us to go back and renegotiate? I don't think there was any of that. And I don't know, but, you know, we can always, I guess later we'll find out more details. Wes, any reports from Salinas before I roll on?
Because of that conversation this morning with Rhodes, so we might actually go out to Fresno and see what it's like. And, bring a small contingent from Monterey Bay. I left a message with Becky. I talked to a couple people who are interested. If I get pretty well a full car, then I just might go. Not exactly what I plan on doing, but at the same time, you need to check it out and see what's going on in other towns, make connections, see who's strong and what they're doing, how we can replicate it. MHCAN, actually, for as much as whatever you want to, I don't know, but, they're doing a good thing, and they're just trying to survive. And right now, once you get in survival mode, they got you on the run. And that's really what they wanted all along, because now you're policing yourself and you're so scared shitless that you're willing to cut people off on purpose because you think it might offend the powers that be.
Yep.
And that's just destroying individualism and creativity and, everything that society is supposed to revel in,
Dig it. Well, thank you, Wes. Anything you want to conclude with, or are you concluded?
Our union meeting would be tomorrow, but if we go up to Fresno, that would be our union meeting. And the thing with Lapis Road is a trap.
tragedy that happened out in Marina. They're doing a 10-6 thing there. I told them it needed to be 24-hour. They're, you know, the whole concept of affordable housing. I've just gone on this housing advisory committee, and now, you know, I'm already getting shut down being able to even express, you know, a fundamental word. And, you know, they won't even take that. Very, very rigid as far as, you know, this is our scope.
Yeah, what you're referring to, of course, is...
about words. What can we do?
What you're referring to is the fact that Lapis Road people have been told, these are people who live in RVs out on Lapis Road in northern Monterey County, that they can be there at night, at least for the next 2 months in their vehicles, but that somehow they have to vacate during the day, even though, and I guess I haven't really inquired into this in detail, there's no, the reasons being given for this have always seemed to me rather questionable. Oh, they want to make sure that a cleanup is allowed, but they've had several weeks to do cleanup, that is, say, making sure there's no toxic deposits, making sure that there's, it's such a deserted area. It's on the road to the dump, after all. And what that means, of course, is people haven't got the funds to use gas to leave in the morning and then go to areas that don't allow you to park your vehicle, your RV, anyway, and come back. Anyway, we've been through this a number of times, and I take it there's nothing new on this.
You know, it's definitely a hardship. I'm expecting people to get towed, and you know, and the RVs are kind of an endangered species because just owning anything without owning the land underneath it, or at least renting it, you're in big trouble as far as keeping it. So people with RVs, I mean, that's a major investment, and you know, that's actually the point, right? Let's get rid of them, make them foot travel, and then they'll be even farther from being able to get out of this.
Yeah, it's enforced impoverishment. Wes, thank you, and I'll be getting back to you. And if you go to Fresno, I'm going to want a full report.
All right, just my call in live.
All right, talk to you then. Bye bye.
Rising and your backs are to the wall, and the kids are needing clothing, and you lack the wherewithal. When economic crisis grabs the country by the ear, oh, that's the time to rally round your leaders. For the leaders of the nation, the Employers Federation, they know all the answers, and the Institute of Bankers know a way to save the day. You've only got to sacrifice your faith. When miners start demanding astronomical amounts to swell their private fortunes in their numbered Swiss accounts, it's then you'll hear the mighty voice of Westminster announce, over to the pits to get the coal out. With bowlers, umbrellas, Monday club, a splendid fellas, ministers and royal pages, and they're not here for the wages, but because the time has come to show the miners how it should be done. When money-grubbing building workers vote to go on strike, and brutal pickets interfere with honest blacklegs' rights, it's then the loyal Britishers are called upon to fight to defend the enterprise and law and order. Cops and TV commentators, lawyers, building speculators, magistrates and judges scatter paying off their grudges. Use the law, it has no flaw, to serve their interest, that is what it's for. Disaffected mums and dads begin to bawl and shout, insisting that our education system's up the spout. Remember Maggie Thatcher there, she knows all about everything concerning education. For she knows that kids and workers are just layabouts and shirkers. To teach them would be folly, and an utter waste of lolly. Waste of time, save the dough.
They're here to work, that's all they need to know. So just remember when you're feeling inclined to criticize, it's not for you to question or to ask the reason why. Close your mouth and go on grafting till the day you die, and win the thanks of those who own the nation. They will con you, they'll mislead you, they will rob you, they will bleed you with a smile, they'll freeze your wages till you walk by easy stages till the day you pull the chain and flush the whole caboodle down the drain.
From Cold Snap, and it's was written originally in 1975 about Britain, of course, but applies to other countries. It's called the Parliamentary Polka, or Please Place in the Appropriate Receptacle Your Government White Paper. It's a long title. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. And to call in, although you won't get me now, you will get my machine, or you might get me. But this is not, this is a pre-recorded show. But we do shows twice a week, Thursdays and Sundays. And so if you call in, I can put your comments on the next show. If you have information, we can talk about it, maybe have an extended conversation. 423-4833. That's the phone number to call. 423-4833. So 2 days ago was the twice monthly city council meeting. I got to the oral communications, the 5 o'clock period where you get a chance to talk for 2 minutes before the city council yawns and goes home. I'm going to replay some of that and some of the Food Not Bombs conversations I had outside city council afterward. Food Not Bombs sets up a table, food, a literature distribution situation, and right outside on the sidewalk. That used to be the precursor to the Tuesday night Freedom Sleepers, but city council harassment, or I should say city manager harassment, Martin Bernal, our city manager, and his subordinate police departments have driven away people with phony tickets. Phony, I say, because they're citations that don't even meet really the requirements of the law. You've been using obstructing the sidewalk and lodging tickets, which don't even meet the criteria of the actual wording of the law. But we have complacent and compliant and collusive judges, the most recent being Kim Basket case, or Kim Basket, actually, as she's officially known, who has been elevated from her basement position. I have to find a new label for basement-level Basket, who used to delight in simply running out fines for poor and homeless people in the basement, but now, and of course, pillaring activists, but is now up in Department 4 doing pretty much the same thing as a full-fledged Superior Court judge. Anyway, let's hear a little, starting with the oral communications period of the City Council. I was not warned to move or remove my recording device by Sergeant Eveleth, who sat in the back, probably because Mayor Chase would prefer not to disturb the council with that kind of nonsense. And for that, I mean, should I salute her? Should I thank her? No, not really. I should just acknowledge that that makes sense. It's obvious. And also it has to do with respecting the constitutional rights of reporters. In the past, I've been actually arrested for leaving my recorder up on the podium to record people who are speaking there and the council's response, not because it interferes with what they do, but because it violates a rule that was created that tended to interfere with what we do as reporters and activists many, many years ago, but not enforced until several years ago under former Mayor Robinson. Anyway, let's hear a little bit of the oral communications period. The communications period is 30 minutes long, and usually there are about 5 or 10 speakers. And then the strange, or perhaps it's not strange at all, the thing is that Chase, the mayor, only allows 2 minutes per speaker. I guess they're just eager to get out of there, and they don't really feel the public has much to say to them, at least at oral communications, or at least I think they're not that interested. And I usually comment on that, but didn't spend a lot of time getting into it this time, but launched into my own the speech I'd brought along, which I couldn't read in its entirety because it's 3 minutes long, really. Here's some of the oral communications. Speaker is Pat Kittle, who
is very much kind of alt-right in his thinking, in my view, at least on a number of issues like immigration. I think he regards himself, he's a big opponent of immigration. I don't know if he favors a wall along the southern border or the massive deportations, but he's big on the need for population control. He is very concerned about Israeli government violations of the peace, although he tends to frame it in terms that make him appear to be anti-Semitic rather than simply anti-Zionist. As a consequence, members of the city council often get up and walk out when he's speaking, and that's kind of what happened this time, and you're going to hear him expressing his concerns about that.
I'm Pat Kittle from Santa Cruz. I have a problem with this kind of no-win situation that you find yourself in right now. You are perplexed at trying to find enough housing for everybody, but wow, is anybody listening to what I'm saying? It would be nice if you would abide by your sworn duty to listen to what I'm saying. I'm talking to you, Rochelle. I'm talking to you, Rochelle. I know I'm using my time. I'm using my time to try to get you people to listen to what I'm saying. You don't want to hear what anti-Semitics say to you. Can we put that in the record? That is what our city councilwoman says. Instead of listening to what I have to say, her mind's all made up that I'm anti-Semitic, end of story. Isn't that typical? You can't criticize Israel or anything about Israel without being anti-Semitic. And having somebody like Rochelle turn her snotty nose up to me. I'm tired of it. I'm really...
We're all going to speak respectfully in here.
Yeah, well, she's not being respectful to me. Am I correct? Why don't you tell her to listen to me?
I'm speaking about everyone, including council members. I'm hearing her.
Yeah. Yeah, please, have her listen to me. You people haven't... God, three of the council members have already walked out of the room. I think Cynthia actually listens to me. I don't know. I think Sandy does, but... And I think you do, Cynthia, but typically you people all just tune out when I come up to the microphone because you don't want to hear what I have to say. And then I end up having to get your attention instead of saying what I have to say. It's really, you got to be ashamed of yourselves, to people who participate in that. You, all of you, actually voted unanimously for a sanctuary city for everybody on earth who cares to move here. You're going to welcome them and give them a sanctuary. That entails 7 billion people. And now you're wringing your hands about, gee, we don't have enough housing. Can you put two and two together? Can you even put one and one together? Do you understand how stupid that is? You ought to be ashamed of yourselves.
So, Pat, who I sometimes satirically call Cat Piddle, but Pat is a man who doesn't mind expressing opinions that for which he's very unpopular in Santa Cruz. And I, frankly, have sympathy not for the opinions, but for the courage to express them, even if I think his misrepresents the power and force of the sanctuary city status, which I wish it really were a sanctuary city. It is not. I mean, we don't go after the former chief of police for double dealing with ICE, the Immigration Control and Enforcement Division, the deportation experts who Vogel's police cooperated with, and Andy Mills. Police haven't indicated any, he at least as boss, he's not indicated any change in that policy. This discussion in the afternoon and some of it in the evening had to do with housing issues. Airbnb renting out weekend rentals to people, taking up housing stock. But, of course, the much deeper issue is the selling of the city away to developers and contractors and special deals for people who already have too much wealth already in the city.
Mayor and City Council, Dave Mittensova. I'm still a little upset about
you guys not seizing the opportunity in number 19, you allowed arguments about, capitalism works and the market shakes down and there's trickle down, I can move in to that housing and some poor people can move into my housing in Live Oak. I don't like that kind of trickle down rationalization for issues. And for you guys to vote on 19 like that, it was very disturbing. But I came here to speak about the sleeping bag, because the city does not do housing. The county does housing. The city does housing rights, and the rights of the homeless. I fasted the first 6 months. Some 88 days, and the response I get from the council. Well, the sleeping ban. And the response I get from the council is further, even greater criminalization of the homeless, bigger sweeps, easier for the policemen to go around the laws to criminalize homeless. You increase the criminalization of homeless in response to a person sacredly fasting, doing it as spiritual as I can. And now we started a rolling fast, and I hope you're feeling the pressure from that, because there are actually now 30 people who are committed to every single day of the calendar year. And they have each calendar day do it. And I have their signature and their contact numbers. It's not just some kind of theoretical hoping Facebook dream. This is a reality. So I'm hoping that maybe you'll feel that pressure. If you can't feel the pressure of the sacred pressure of calling to your consciousness and your morality to stop this harassment, sanctuary cities do not attract people. Sanctuary cities allow people to, like, maybe start getting a step up. You know, there needs to be some consideration of what you're doing to homelessness to allow... A project like, sure, it was only a few complexes on Pacific Avenue. That's my neighborhood. To allow that to get all the credits of doing a housing authority-like project, but not really committing to housing authority, is bull. Bull.
And David Silva has been organizing what's called a running fast, a rolling fast, that is. And he was fasting himself, but he became too weak to do it, or his doctors finally persuaded him not to, or who knows, maybe he got bored with the whole thing and took a trip because he needed a little vacation. Silva's been a longtime fighter against the city's no sleeping after 11 o'clock outside in a vehicle on much private property. The anti-homeless sleeping ban, 6.36010A, and he has established this procedure, and you can reach him if you want to be a part of it, whereby each person agrees to stay awake all night, one night, per month, and chooses a day of that month so they can essentially be in solidarity with homeless people outside and say, in essence, this is what it feels like not to follow the law, not to sleep at night after 11 o'clock. His number, in case you're interested, is 435-0627, 435-0627. And he apparently has had some success signing up people by his account. This was actually quite a pressure tactic when other activists were involved and when the Homeless Issues Task Force from 17 years ago was active back in 2000. And it actually resulted... when you had a council majority that had pledged itself to do something about the sleeping ban, they ended up doing nothing, but at least they put it on the agenda briefly. And it got a first reading and passed at a first reading, the so-called safe sleeping zones. Anyway, if you want to be a part of this, you can. I am not, myself, both for health reasons and political strategy reasons. And I think it has a principled core to it, but it also seems to me to be ineffectual at some basic level. Although, you know, what may seem ineffectual, you know, may tomorrow prove to be the straw that broke the council's back. Could be.
Sorry, y'all.
Brad, who's actually run for city council, he's the only man who's ever picked up my tape recorder and sort of shoved it across, I wouldn't say thrown it, but, well, in a way, he threw it across the room and gotten into arguments with me on the street of a relatively hostile kind. We take different stances on a lot of issues, and I don't think he sees me. He sees some sort of media-created image. But he's also a pretty regular attender at City Council. And here he is, giving some thoughts, primarily as a sort of follow-up to the housing issue, which was the issue in the afternoon and again in the evening.
It's halftime, folks. yeah, I lived in a lot of, I guess, because I had housing assistance. I've lived in a number of these units, which are, stipulated prior to development that they include a certain number of low-income people. And on each occasion, I kind of felt like it was, was repeated that they would raise the rents on everyone across the board. So one thing I've noted just from being, one of the boats in those harbors is the rising tide. So they apply that. Excuse me. Let me take my hat. So they apply that to the low-income people as well as the high-income people. So in some ways, by putting 6, 8, 15%, 7.5%, some kind of number on like how many people you allow in there. I mean, for me, it's far more important. Like most places, except for the one with the one exception of the far west side. I lived in a unit that was kind of the size of a postage stamp. It was like Taco Bell is to Mexican food. Yeah, it had beans, rice, lettuce, cheese, and tomato, and everything else. But it was, it's Taco Bell. That's the Barry Swinson units you have at 555. By the way, you have about 90. Somebody give me a number, and they're all identical to the other Barry Swinson units I've lived in, and they're all overpriced and they're all tiny. I mean, they're real, real tiny, and they're mostly going to go to students where they're located. That's what I've noted. That's what I've taken in. One housing place that I think looks pretty nice and is kind of successful. They've located on the other side of town, which is Redwood Commons. I think Redwood Commons is pretty decent, pretty commendable. I have never lived there. I the rent was kind of high, but more livable places than concentrating on micromanaging the price, I think, would be good.
Actually applauded, not so much for his conclusions. I think micromanaging prices would be good too, but his information, his willingness to talk about his own experiences in these places, to name the names of the big developers, Barry Swinson. I don't know if he was weighing the risk, assuming he might get evicted for such public criticism, although I don't even know if he was talking about where he lives now. But let's hear some more oral communications from September 26th.
I love those who labor. I sing of the farmers and weavers and fishermen and miners as well. Now all you who hear me, I pray you draw near me. Before you grow weary, I'll sing of myself. I was brought up in plenty until I was 20. I joyed myself as but children can be. A joy to my father, a joy to my mother. The pain of my country was nothing to me. My school days being over, I became a rover to Russia and China, to France and to Spain. I lived at my leisure, I lived but for pleasure, and so none the wiser to England I came. I thought it no danger to follow a stranger, but with time changing a friend he became. For the joys of a lover can equal no other, forever anew, and yet always the same. Good fortune attending, we don't lack a living. Our children a blessing, our joy to renew. But to live amid plenty can only torment me when the wealth of the country belongs to the few. I join with the angry, I join with the hungry. For long years of anguish, the price will be paid. To hate and to anger, I am not a stranger. I welcome the danger, and yet I'm afraid. For I fear the fate of the rebels and fighters who ransom the future with torture and pain. As the trial comes near, if I find I can dare it, with joy I will share it, no longer afraid. For I've learned to be angry, I've learned to be lonely, I've learned to be many, I've learned to be one. I've earned all my friends, even foes will commend me. I stand with the many, I am not alone. In the presence of fighters, I find a new peace. In the company of workers, replenish myself. Of miners and weavers, of rebels and dreamers, when I sing of my brothers, I sing of myself.
That was from Folkways Record of Contemporary Songs by Peggy Seeger, The Song of Myself, which she composed and sang in 1978. Peggy's still around, still singing songs. Ewan's been dead for a number of years. Music continues on. To end today's broadcast with a report I got yesterday from activist Keith McHenry down at the post office, where he was sort of hanging out, kind of keeping an eye on the belongings of everybody piled up along the fence. You can see actually this in a video by Brent Adams on Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, I believe. Here's a bit of that interview, and I'll be back on Sunday with still more. Call me at 423-4833 if you have updates or comments. 423-4833.
Okay, well, I'm on the line. Today is September 27, 2017. I'm with Keith McHenry, who I believe is lurching about down at the post office, where some group of authorities has driven away most of the homeless folks camped there. What's the story down there, Keith?
Well, right now there is really only about five people on the water street side of the post office, but all the belongings, minus the tarps and cardboard and so on, is stacked up along the back annex of the post office on Water Street. And there's a little bit of stuff that's right at near where Food Up Bomb serves. And then there's a few people's entire camps are set up in front of the post office down by between the post office and Vet Hall. There's like two sort of sheltery things happening there. And the understanding is that the police came in and told people they had to move all their belongings because they were going to power wash. And then the city, this was just early this morning, woke everybody up. People took all their stuff down and they stacked it all, like I say, all along the Water Street side of the modern part of the post office in the back. And that's everything is still stacked up against the wall there. Yeah, bicycles, chairs, things like that. And then Bonnie and a couple of people are sitting with some belongings right at like where they usually stay. And where it gets wider on the sidewalk. And the power washer guy just showed up, and he's just now power washing the front of the post office.
Isn't this a little late to be power washing the sidewalk?
I don't know what time you is good or bad or whatever.
I mean, it's
doing beyond, it right now.
It's beyond good.
They're moving the people over here.
And I was referring to the fact that it was in late afternoon, I believe, when Keith called yesterday.
They're moving the people over here.
What's happening, Keith?
Hey, 1 second. Yeah. The power washer guy is looping everybody over there now. Yeah. So he at least went over to talk to him. I don't know if he's, what his story is.
So are the people likely to return tonight after the power washing is over?
That I don't know. It's a possibility that that's true.
I mean, is this an attempt to move people along, or is this the first such power washing that's occurred here that you know of?
Well, in a long time, yeah. There is supposed to be a twice monthly power washing thing happening on some schedule, and I don't know what the schedule is. It's the same guy that comes by the library.